This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of our prospect podcast. Another of the recording a little closer to publication time than normal. We have torn Jeff away from his 72 different screens that have MILB TV on all of them so that we could give you another of our prospect podcast. Jeff, great to see you. I appreciate again that you are. I know that you probably only have like 5 on that I can't see right now, you know, because you're watching multiple starts, I'm sure.
No. I've had travel days. So you caught me last Tuesday as I flew into Florida, and there were 9 other people in my mother-in-law's house between my brother-in-law's family and my family and our kids and everything. So it was a lot of noise. This is a little bit easier. I'm back at home, but landed a little bit later, and my youngest son had lacrosse practice. So I ran here from lacrosse practice. I haven't even put on any games yet. I'll do that once we get off.
That will be, I will do so as well. We already missed that the Carolina Mudcats, what we described as the most interesting team in baseball, minor league baseball, but I would say baseball, that's where interesting baseball resides. Most interesting team last week, which has the best record in the minors as well, but also had an 8-run inning come from behind today. It's a lot of great stuff going on. So today we're going to talk about catchers, because kind of thought about, we wanted to talk about this because we have 13 catchers in the Baseball America top 100 right now, which I feel like I can't say it's a record because we don't treat our live continually updating top 100 as the record setting one, right? Where it changes week to week depending on graduations and all, but 13's a lot. 13's a lot more than normal. So Jeff, to kind of kick this off before we kind of dive into looking at these catching prospects and kind of the challenge, I want to say one of the main things we're going to talk about today is the challenge as you're a fan, if you're someone who works at Baseball America, or if you're a scout or a front office official, of evaluating catching prospects. But are we just in a golden age of catching prospects, Jeff, or why do you think we have 13 of them in our top 100?
Yeah, and I feel like I've had this conversation over the last 10 years multiple times about a golden age of catching prospects, sometimes in different contexts, maybe more in like a fantasy context. But I do think that it's definitely a position where if you can hit well above the bar and you can catch enough, it's definitely an area where you can accumulate a lot of war, just in terms of how you're viewed and how you're valued. I think the other part of it too is teams, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but teams do seem to be able to coach up catching and teach guys to receive and, you know, block and just do the little things at the position, at least getting them up to speed at a faster rate than I remember in previous years. It seems like there's a lot of guys that come in with defensive question marks, you know, out of the draft in particular, that, and especially from the college ranks, I think two that come to mind are like Will Smith and the other one being Austin Wells, where there was some question to, you know, how good they were defensively and if they really were going to stick behind the plate. And I think if you followed their careers, there were times where it did look a little shaky, but eventually something clicks, whether it's reps, et cetera, and those guys get to a point where they're really, really productive.
I also want to credit, there's a Mark Feinsand story, I believe, today that talked to front office executives about what is the most valuable, most important position. If they could take one position and we're going to fill that to start off to build a team. And the overwhelming answer was catcher. But also that story noted, as we've noted also, that catcher is also a position. Everyone nowadays feels like they need two, right? There is no Salvador Perez, maybe the last of the I'm the catcher. I'll catch 145 plus games. And, you know, if I break my leg, I might miss 3 games, but I'll be back by the weekend kind of guy. Nowadays, even the really good catchers, you're really kind of thinking that they're probably going to catch 115, 120. They're good enough offensively. They'll DH some in addition to that. But so everyone needs 2 or 3. So there's a lot of, in a way that you don't really need. No one's like, we need our 2 shortstops. You know, we need our 2 center fielders to make this work. It's catching's a different experience. But the other thing I would say with that is, and it's also true that I would say that while there are durable catchers, it is also a position that wears you out a lot quicker. I just called up the Fangraphs 2019 catching war leaders, right? And it's Real Muto, Grandal, Roberto Perez, Mitch Garver, Christian Vasquez, Tom Murphy, Robinson Chirinos, Wilson Contreras, Carson Kelly, Buster Posey. That's your top 10. There's like 2 or 3 of those who are like everyday regulars. Here we are, you know, again, a number of seasons later now, 7 seasons later, I guess 19, 20, but 6 years later, that's a lot of turnover in a way that you wouldn't see at a lot of other positions. It's a challenging position, but that's kind of a great way to dive into it, I would say, is nowadays when we're looking at a catcher, I like how you put it, like, you know, that if you can get a really good one, it really does. I really do think, like, if you said, well, why did the Giants win 3 World Series? That's a good pitching. But having Buster Posey as a guy who was giving you middle of the order production and the defense behind the plate does give you an advantage. You know, teams like that, things like that. But when you're looking at a catcher, bat first, glove first, got to be all of the above. And has that changed?
You know, I'm still a sucker for a really good defensive catcher. I think, you know, if you have a strong enough offense and you have a good pitching staff, it shapes runs off the board. You know, it in this day and age with bigger bases, you know, limits on how much you can check the runner at first base, you know, and guys are just running more often. So, you know, I think being able to handle the position defensively is still incredibly valuable. But, you know, I think there's a middle ground that, you know, if you have enough defensive ability that you can keep runners honest, that you don't make bad mistakes, that you frame and you steal enough strikes, and, you know, you can provide something offensively, I think that's kind of the perfect marriage. Like, if you can find a player that can do all of those things, you know, ideally, you know, those are the guys that you're going to invest in. But, you know, I do think, like, you look at some guys like Cal Raleigh, you look at a guy like Austin Wells, you look at a guy like Will Smith, they do sort of balance it. And it might be a little bit more bat than it is defensive, but they're at least average behind the plate. I think that goes a long way. So I do think that, like, it's the position to me where defense is most important, maybe even more so than shortstop. I just think that, you know, when you see bad catching, and I see a lot of young catchers, a lot of guys learning the position during the summer on the Cape, and during my summers, especially like my Julys, which are chock full of going to games and watching games, I see, you know, on one given night, I might see a AAA game, I might go to a AA game, I might see 2 Cape games. So I kind of have that like calibration of seeing someone who's pretty good back there versus a guy that's still learning the position. And there's just a lot of mistakes that are made, you know, a lot of free bases and sometimes free runs or free strikes or balls, excuse me, and walks that kind of come along with guys that are kind of clunky back there. So, you know, I do think that there's a defense is more important because you can't really hit your way into the position if you're a 30 defender back there, you know, but if you're a 45 or a 50, then you kind of can. So I think there has to be some give and take, some balance, but I think ultimately it's the position on the field where defense is paramount.
I would say where I've kind of come to now is I agree with you. Defense is paramount, but when it comes to minor league prospects, I'm probably more inclined for the guy who can hit than I used to be. And the reason for that is that catching is the position, I was on, as we're recording this, I was on foul territory with two big league catchers earlier today, Eric Kratz, AJ Pierzynski. And I asked them the question and they said, like, at shortstop, not that you don't develop skills, right? Like, you don't develop your ability to know, okay, I'm going to shade an extra step this way because the pitcher's throwing this pitch to this location and I'm going to, you know, start moving in that direction, right? You can pick up things that help you add to your range. You can figure out, okay, if I make this throw like this, you know, I can get a little bit quicker exchange, you know, all those things, you can improve it, but nothing like with catcher, where the Brewers seem to do this every year, right? If the Brewers bring in a catcher, he gets better over and over. William Contreras is now kind of the epitome of the well-rounded catcher. If the Braves had known that, I promise you they would not have traded him away in the deal to bring in Sean Murphy, because he's better than Sean Murphy, right? They had him and Shea Langeliers, and they end up with Sean Murphy. And if you had it all to do over again, if you could develop his defense like the Brewers have, you would want Contreras out of that group. But I would say that there is no position now that is more of a pro skills development position. You could say pitchers. You could argue a lot of things with pitchers. But I would say, like, with pitchers, you have colleges that are doing a lot of those things, right? You have the Wake Forest Pitching Lab. You have what they're doing at LSU. There's all these programs, right? No one does catching like the pros do catching. And it's not possible, is what I would say, because you've got 20 hours a week if you're a college program, right? Very limited time for instruction in season. And you probably don't have anyone on the coaching staff who you say, well, what is your job? I just focus on catching and receiving 365 days a year. You can't do that. Where every MLB organization has, if not one, if not multiple people who that's literally all they think about. And to give, like, I love kind of giving this example. If you just look at how much catching has changed, you know, I promise you, I'm not going down this rabbit hole much, but like, if you look at the last 10 years, if you looked at catching 10 years ago to now, there would be the very obvious changes. Okay. They used to set up both knees off the ground. Now everyone sets up one knee on the ground most of the time, because that helps you receive better, helps you frame better. Doesn't really seem to affect throwing. Does it seem to affect blocking? I know that drives some people crazy to say that. But we have not seen problems with those things while we have seen improvements in framing. But even on that, like, okay, I'll take a more extreme example. I'll put it to you, Jeff. I'll put you on the spot, right? 5 years ago, if you said, hey, I'm calling for a fastball low at the bottom of the zone as a catcher, and I know it's going to be if it's executed properly, it's going to be a borderline pitch, right? What would the catcher, you know, the catcher would present a target, right? And they would just kind of, they would try to then take that target and just catch it in a way that allowed them to make it, you move it up just a little bit, right? Now, it is you present a target, then you drop your glove all the way basically to the ground. And then as the pitch is coming, in a motion, you don't try to catch it at the edge of the zone. You just try in a fluid motion to catch it where you end up in the middle of the zone. That wasn't taught 10 years ago. And when you say, like, where did that come from? I promise you, it came from some kind of catching instructor spending hours and hours and hours and discovering that actually led to more stolen strikes at the bottom, right? There's all these little parts of it. But that's where I would say that the bat is a little bit more important, because Austin Wells to me is a perfect example of this. There are guys out there who, when they're in college, you're like, this guy's never going to catch. And then they end up being fine, right? Like, Paul DeJong is pretty much the only example I can give you of a guy who's like, that guy's not going to play shortstop. He didn't play shortstop in college, really, who then is a shortstop. Like, it's not something where guys just surprise you with their ability to stick at shortstop that much. They do it at catcher. So, okay, along those lines, got 13 in the top 100. Who are you most comfortable? Doesn't mean, I'm not saying who do we have ranked number one, but who are you most comfortable with as like, yeah, I feel pretty good that this guy's going to be good for a long time.
Oof.
I am putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Based on my previous statement, if we're just focusing strictly on the defensive side of it, I think it's Ethan Salas, but I have major question marks about Ethan Salas's bat. He just hasn't been productive in a couple of years, or about a year and a half now. We just haven't seen the same kind of numbers. You know, this might be a funny pick, but I think it's Therion Lorenzo.
You stole my pick.
I think the bat is so loud. It's a switch hitter, which switch hitting catchers kind of love that profile as well. And I thought the defense, I saw him in spring training. I saw him in Arizona Fall League. I thought there was something there. I'm not saying he's a 60. It's not close to that. It's not Ethan Salas. Like, you see Ethan Salas receive. It is buttery. It's smooth. It's
the best.
Yeah, it's really good. The first time you saw him, like when he was 16 in a big league game in spring training, it was clear. You know, it was like, all right, this guy is a phenomenal catcher. But yeah, I think it's Lorenzo, just because of the combination of power. And I think that there is enough defensive ability there, a big enough arm that moves well enough behind the plate that I think you can coach that up and you can get to a point where he's pretty good. And, you know, by the way, the Tigers have had a couple of pretty good defensive catchers over the last couple of years, and Jake Rogers and, you know, now Dylan Dingler. Mm-hmm. So they do have some guys that, you know, probably could teach him a little bit. And, you know, I don't know what the catching coordinating or coaching is like within the organization. I think it's a pretty well-run organization, and they've done a great job with a lot of their prospects over the last couple of years. So I wouldn't be shocked if they have a good one. Don't cover the organization. You could probably speak more eloquently on that than I can, but I think he's the one that I would pick, because I do think there's enough offensive firepower there, real firepower in that bat. Plus there's enough defensive ability.
I came away, so today, in preparation for this, knowing we were going to do this, as I love to watch video. So I tried to dial up video of receiving. I'm not going to worry about throwing tonight. One other thing I would say is that I think we both agree, if you said you could have one or the other, you want to have both. But if I can have a great left hand, I'm going to take that as a catcher over a great right arm every time, right? Because a great right arm is a great weapon to have. But even now, even with the liberalized stolen base rules, you're still probably only going to face, you only face a couple of those per game, maybe, you know, attempts. And by the way, if your pitcher's quick, you could be 2-1 and still get a guy out. If your pitcher's slow to the plate, you could be 1-9 and it's safe. You know, it's there's not just the catcher who controls that. The left hand, if you can't receive, if you can't steal pitches on the edge of the zone, if you can't comfortably block that pitch, which, by the way, I know we call it blocking, but a lot of blocking in pro baseball in 2025 is hand more than it is body, because some of these pitches, like a lot of blocking to me is the worst case scenario pitch, right? Where you thought it was going to be down and away, and the pitcher completely lost it. So it's a fastball that's up over your head and you've got to be really quick, or you thought it was going to be on the outside and it ended up on the inside and in the dirt. There's a lot of things that can happen there where, yes, you want to get your whole body in front of it, but sometimes you're just going to put the glove and you better be able to kind of control that with the hand too. But try to watch receiving. Couldn't watch all 13, because we should note Samuel Basayo hasn't caught in the minors yet this year, injury. Jefferson Cuero hasn't caught in the minors this year or last year, with the exception of maybe one inning. I can't remember if it was the top of the first or the bottom of the first that Jefferson Cuero hurt his shoulder. I was watching that game in the opening day game. So we're still waiting for Cuero to come off the IL. And then Blake Mitchell, also in the top 100, is an injury as well. So 10 of the 13 got to watch and kind of dialed up as many borderline bottom of the zone pitches as I could. I'm not proclaiming that I'm the expert on this, that I'm a scout or anything like that, but you can see how different guys do it. And I kind of expected, I have to say, with Lorenzo, I was expecting worse than what I saw. I know he's a big frame guy, but you, like you said, you saw him in person in spring training. He's pretty fluid. It's the hands work pretty well. I did not come away from that in any way watching it thinking this is a guy who has trouble. Now, again, limited look. I'm not saying I saw every pitch he received and all that, but I tried to pick pitches that require, you know, enough of them to see, like, okay, attention to detail, right? Are you doing the same thing every time? Or sometimes are you getting a little lazy and going, I'm not going to bring my glove all the way down. I'll give a target. I'll stay here. Some guys do that. How do they think when it gets in the glove, right? Eduardo Tait rattles around a little bit in there. Doesn't, not clanking it all the way out, but you do see the ball move a little bit in that mitt sometimes where, you know, again, he said Ethan Salas watching these 10, Ethan Salas felt like I was watching a guy who was at a different level on this receiving. But then we get to, you know, I think that's a good one. You mentioned Lorenzo. I would say Dalton Rushing, since you mentioned Lorenzo. I think that Dalton Rushing could be okay defensively. It's going to take a lot of work for him to be better than that. But if he's okay defensively with that bat, I don't know what team he's going to fit with because they've got Will Smith and the Dodgers for a long time. But, man, that's not bad. Basayo, you know, also obviously so young. But how do you kind of – what do we do with the conundrum that is Ethan Salas?
Yeah, it's really tough. Because I think, you know, the player that we saw initially out of the gates was exciting. I mean, the bat was better. He was so young. But we've had, you know, a full season Arizona Fall League. I mean, he played 113 games last year. 23 in the Arizona Fall League. He's had another 10 this year. And he just hasn't hit. I mean, it's been closer to the Mendoza line than 250, you know, and that's worrisome. There hasn't been a lot of power. Even in the Arizona Fall League, which is a great environment, he did hit 4 home runs. But I don't know. I mean, it's the AFL over 23 games and he slugged 424. Once again, he's really young. The point that our colleague Ben Badler makes anytime we talk about Ethan Salas is, he would be draft eligible this year, correct? Because he'd be a high school senior. Yeah, he turns 19 in June. So he would be a high school senior if he had stayed in the States and, you know, gone through the normal process. So I think when you keep that in mind, you maybe want to give the bat a little bit more time. I just don't know how much upside there really is with Salas when you see what the overall numbers have been. He is super young. He's played against much older competition. He's a phenomenal defensive catcher. But we've seen with these phenoms that just even treading water, right, even showing the improvements, we saw Sebastian Walcott really struggle for a period of time and then make the adjustment and take a step forward. I think that's what I have to see from Salas this year. I have to see some adjustment over the next couple of months. And even if it's a struggle in the first half and then we see a really productive, positive improvement at the plate in the second half, I think that's enough for me to stay there. But if we're looking at another guy, you know, another season where a guy has like a 80 WRC plus, regardless of what the age to competition is, I think we have to think about moving him down regardless of how strong of a defensive catcher he is. So, you know, it's unfortunate because he's so outstanding in one regard. And I think the upside and what we saw glimpses of, you know, in his pro debut was really exciting. But at this point, you know, there needs to be some production. The rubber has to meet the road a little bit.
I would say with that when you said about stagnation, the guy I come to think about is Diego Cartaya, right? Who kind of emerged as this great young Dodgers catcher. The Dodgers seem to churn through a lot of these guys where they have a lot of great young catching prospects. But he had a great year. Then the next year, it wasn't as good. And it's like, okay, you know, there's some injuries. The next year wasn't great. And we moved him down, but it was like, you're still kind of, it's catching, it's hard, can take longer to develop there, all these things. And then you turn around and he's DFA'd, right? And now it doesn't mean he's still done as a prospect because the Twins picked him up. And the other thing I would say about it is the great thing about catching in many ways is if you're a 27-year-old, 28-year-old position player prospect at like any other position and it hasn't clicked for you, it's probably not going to. But there are plenty of examples of catchers who's like, they didn't hit when they were 25. They didn't hit when they were 27. It's like, oh, at 31, they had the best offensive season of their career. And it's like, yes, because catching is really hard, you know? But, okay, I'll ask it a different way. If you just said to say, we may wave a magic wand, all of these guys are going to be average defenders. And by the way, we can promise you that's not going to be the case. But if we could, who would you then like? Because who do you think has the best offensive potential of our top 100 crew of catchers?
Ooh, you know, I would say it's Samuel Basayo.
I would go there too.
I would think offensively, you know, it's 30 home run pop. There's bat to ball ability. There's enough approach, good angles. He kind of checks all the boxes and he's much younger than Rushing. And I think I like the bat a little bit more than Lorenzo. Though I guess in the right circumstance, you could maybe argue Lorenzo. I just think Basayo's just a better hitter. So if the defense comes up, if he actually has the opportunity to catch a lot, there's been a lot of injuries and limitations in that concern. And then of course he's got somebody by the name of Adley Rutschman, who's, you know, kind of the franchise catcher for the Orioles. So I don't know, but I do think that the upside wise, that's the player I would go with, because I just think the bat is remarkably good for a player his age. And he's another guy that, you know, not as young as Salas. You know, maybe he hasn't played against players that are 5 years older than him, like Salas has this year, but it's been more like 3.5 to 4. So
I mean, he's 20 years old and he reached AAA last year, right?
Like exactly.
And by the way, when we're talking about this, like with Salas, we said we haven't seen really that much impact. And Salas is younger, but Basayo's got 52 home runs in 332 games in the minors. There's real power there that you're not having to project.
And I'm actually incorrect. He was 7.5 years younger than the average player in AAA last year. He's 6.6 and a half. He's 6.5 years younger than the average player in AAA this year, which is actually a bigger age gap between the average. And obviously AAA has a lot of like guys who are in their 30s.
Oh, sure. But
they also have major league experience more often than not. But it's a bigger gap than actually what Salas's gap is this year, which I think is 5 years and 1 month is the difference between him and the average age in the Texas League. So Basayo has actually been consistently producing against significantly older competition and has done so throughout his entire career, dating back to, you know, 2023, which was his full season debut. So as long as the catching's there, I just think he's such a phenomenal hitter. One of the better hitting prospects in baseball, regardless of position.
Right. If you told me that he could never catch again, he'd still be an elite prospect because of his bat.
He could be a first baseman and rank in the top 25 easy. Yeah. No questions.
You mentioned, I would say that those are him and Rushing are probably the two best hitting prospects in this, but I think it's worth mentioning one of your favorites, Moises Ballesteros, who also kind of fits into that. Just, I think we both feel really comfortable that Ballesteros is going to hit. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah. And he's been getting a lot of run at first base. Hasn't been bad over there. I don't think his catching is as bad as like people think it is.
I think his body is bad enough that people think his catching's, but it's Alejandro Kirk-esque, where you just look at the body and you say, that guy can't catch.
And he's a little trimmer than he was.
He's still big though.
He's still big, you know, but there's big catchers. Francisco Alvarez is a big guy. It's kind of a similar build. I think just from like a pure hitting, you know, like a pure hitter, you want to use that kind of cliche expression, guy that, you know, can hit a variety of different pitch types in a variety of different locations to all fields. He does that. Good approach, keeps a tidy zone. there's power on contact and he doesn't have to sell out for it. Yeah, I just think from a hitting perspective, he maybe has the best hit tool of any of the players we're talking about.
Okay. Before we wrap this up, we talked about there are 13 catchers on the top 100. That means that there aren't that many that I would say that are knocking on the door. But there are a few. Who is a catcher that you like, a non-current top 100 prospect, who you wouldn't be surprised to see? Again, maybe we make it to 14. Maybe we make it to 15 at some point this year.
I think Jimmy Crooks of the Cardinals. We got good feedback on him. The data that we got in terms of framing and some of the defensive numbers that we've seen through sources, he ranked really, really highly, like surprisingly highly. Was also the Texas League MVP last year, so he can hit. He's hit since he was at Oklahoma. I think he's a guy that legitimately could get added to the top 100 as players start to graduate. And I have to look at who has at bats and who's up against it. I'm sure we have someone pretty soon. He's a guy that could potentially, you know, slide into the back end of the list, and I think is a reasonable pick and does a lot of things well. And like I said, the defense grades out well, and, you know, he was kind of drafted as a hit first prospect. The Cardinals also have, you know, to their credit, there's a lot of negative stuff you could say about them over the last 5 to 6 years. They've consistently churned out pretty solid catching prospects.
I would agree on Crooks. I'll give you two more. I'll say Alfredo Duno is a guy who's been on the 100 before. If he could stay healthy, big body guy, but there's a lot of power potential there. But I'll go with Cooper Engel. Guardians is another guy who pretty pure hitter. It's a little bit unconventional from a standpoint of, like, I would say it's hit over power. And usually your catching profile is more power over hit, but there's really good catching, really good hitting ability there. And I think he's steadily gotten better defensively. When we talk about guys who, you know, this is a guy who kind of fits that mold of, he played multiple positions early in his college career, developed, you know, and then kind of went more and more back behind the plate more full time, has really worked at developing as a receiver, or developing as a thrower. I would say there's still work to be done there, but we've definitely seen improvement. The trend line's in the right direction. And again, to go back to it, you could be a backup catcher. You know, if you're like 20 hit, 50 power, really good defender. But if you want to be a regular and you're not Martin Maldonado, you kind of got to hit some. And Cooper Engel can definitely do that. So that's one that jumps out to me. So we hope you've enjoyed, like we've doing this little deep dive into catching prospects. You know, if you have a topic that you'd like for us to take a swing at, you know, you can, we're both on social media, you know, at Jeff Ponce BA, at JJ Coop 36, but also you can send an email to askba@baseballamerica.com as well. And we're going to get on our prospect soapboxes right after this quick break. Hiring has changed. When we have an opening, we need a way to organize what quickly becomes a very complicated process. That's why we need Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is how it makes hiring so fast, because it organizes the candidates and allows me to set up every step of the process right within Indeed's website. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no reason to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
And we're back. So if you listen to the podcast every week, the Prospect Podcast, you know we end them every week with what we call our Prospect Soapbox, which is each of us is going to talk about a prospect that intrigues us. And the one rule is it's a minor league prospect. It's not an amateur, and they can't be in the top 100. We're not talking about top 100 prospects. Hey, last week or 2 weeks ago, I talked about Chandler Simpson, and look who's in the big leagues now. Chandler Simpson, much to my joy. But as I'll go first this week, and I got an easy one because I went down to check out the new ballpark in Spartanburg, the Hub City Spartanburgers, last weekend. And nice new ballpark, but it was also to getting to see the team as well. Really good matchup. I got to see Gary Gilhill on the mound for Bowling Green, and I got to see David Davalillo on the mound, right-hander for the Rangers, who, while Gilhill, as I would say, the more famous of the two prospects, but Davalillo is the guy who was your minor league ERA leader last year, 1.88 ERA. And I will tell you, I would still take Gilhill as a prospect, but if you said, who was the better pitcher that night? And Gilhill looked fine, but it was Davalillo. 92.3, see some fours there. You know, I would say the velocity, I can't believe I'm saying this, but by modern era standards, you'd have to say that the velocity was fringe average, maybe, as a starter. Man, it's crazy to say that, but because it was touching fours. But what I would say with it also, though, is it's a really good kind of split change that's really effective. Slider, curveball. But the main thing is, man, this guy locates. Man, this guy can pitch. When he elevated his fastball, it was with intent. It was late in counts after he'd gotten everyone's eye level low because everything else is down the zone, down in the zone, down in the zone. And then once he's basically utterly worn you out by never making a mistake middle up, then he'll throw that fastball top of the zone or above it, and he can get some swings and misses that way. He would have had a perfect game for five innings. He threw five, but if not for the fact that he had a strikeout that was a wild pitch, so a batter did reach on it, but just was really well-rounded. He's in high A. I don't want to make it sound like this is one of the best pitching prospects in the game or anything, but I was very intrigued. And the other thing I want to note is the consistency that he has shown so far. By the way, when you talk about bloodlines, his dad was a minor league player, also coached in the Mets organization. Grandfather, Vic Davalillo, who, if you are a baseball historian, you'll know, like all-star, gold glover, key member, you know, played on multiple World Series teams. Pretty much Venezuelan baseball royalty is the way I would say it. But he's got, by the way, he has a younger brother, David does, who Gabriel Davalillo, who is one of the best prospects in the Angel system, signed this past international signing period as their top target catching prospect, number 13 in the Angels organization as well. So this is a baseball family. You see that savviness. But the stat that I will kind of step off the soapbox with is Davalillo, who's now been pitching 4 years, right? He had an outing in the Arizona Complex League in 23, where he gave up 4 runs in 2 innings. That was his worst outing. That's the only time in his career he's given up 4 runs. I don't mean 4 earned runs. I mean 4 runs. He also has only had 3 outings in his career where he's given up 3 runs. Every other outing of his career has been 2 runs or fewer. He's never really, in his pro career, everyone has bad outings. He's never had that outing where the manager just comes out middle of the inning. It's like, just didn't have it tonight, David. Don't worry, you'll get him next time. He's never done that yet. It's amazing. He basically has been Mr. Consistency, time and time again, where if you give him the ball, I know I'm dooming him. I know that we're recording this, and I know that he's going to go out there at the end of this week, and it's going to be like 1 2/3, and it's going to be like J.J. Cooper utterly jinxed him. But let me say, as we record this, I hope that doesn't happen for him, but as we record this, it is remarkable just how steady, how consistent, how reliable he has been so far in his young career. So that's mine. So Jeff, who are you interested in talking about tonight?
I'm going to go with somebody who's been as hot as just about any player in A-ball, any high school draftee from last year. That is the White Sox 2024 second rounder, Michigan high school prep bat, Caleb Bonnemer. Really exciting player. I think you look at, you know, what he's done at the plate so far this year. I mean, sure, it's, you know, it's 13 games, it's 47 at bats, right? So take it with a grain of salt.
Small sample size alert.
Sure, exactly. You know, small sample caveats apply here, but 319, 452, 532. He's got seven extra base hits, 10 walks to 12 strikeouts. He's actually has an even amount of RBIs to strikeouts. And then the underlying data is really good as well. Just throw some numbers at you here. EV 95, I didn't get 90, got a 95th percentile. It's just a little bit more accurate. 106, he's 93rd percentile in WOBA, 84th percentile, this is among all A-ball players, in ex-WOBA. WRC plus, 90th percentile. Swing decisions, more mid-grade, it's like 70th percentile. He does chase a little bit, but the strikeouts and swing and miss at a pretty good rate. And then just like the hard hit rates, like 89th percentile. He's hitting the ball well consistently. In terms of his athletic testing, I did a little bit of digging. He tested size, athleticism, power, speed, all that stuff, like almost spot on to Gunnar Henderson. I had somebody actually ask that question in the chat. I had a really good chat today. I want to say shout out to the folks that were putting in questions, because I felt like I had like 20 or so like really interesting questions. This one actually made me think that I had to go out and do some research on it and be like, you know, I don't think Bonnemer was quite the athlete that Gunnar was, but it turns out that he was slightly better athlete than Gunnar was at that same age. Now Gunnar got up to like 220 pounds. If Bonnemer can add similar mass, it's a similar size frame, similar athletic profile. He's hitting the ball hard. He's producing in games. I'm not saying he's Gunnar Henderson, but I do think this is like a very interesting, similar profile.
And he's a shortstop third baseman.
Yeah. And Gunnar was from Mississippi or Alabama. It wasn't like, you know, top tier high school competition, probably might be a little worse or at least comparable to Michigan. Michigan's been pretty good in terms of high school comp the last couple of years.
I'm still going to go with warm weather, basically better than cold weather.
Probably, but the population isn't as high, right? So there's some trade-off there. I don't know, but it's probably
also it's Michigan. So you start every, or at least if they haven't changed the rule, you start every count with a 1-1.
A 1-1. Yeah, that's right. You know, did he play in the Catholic Conference? I think that's just a Catholic Conference rule in Michigan. So
I have to ask on that. I remember who was the Cardinals outfield prospect, yeah. First rounder.
Yep.
Yeah. I blanked on the name, but there was a Cardinals outfield prospect like 10 years ago or whatever, who that was when I first was introduced to the 1-1 rule.
Yeah. I think it's just Catholic Conference. Just haven't talked to Brian Sikowski, former coach in the Catholic Conference, about that. I think that's just a Catholic Conference thing. So I think it's like Orchard Lake, Brother Rice, some of those schools. But I mean, a talented hitter. We're seeing it in pro ball. He's hit the ground running. And I remember him really busting out at PG National back in 2023. He was kind of up and down depending upon the event and where you saw him. But there were some folks who were really high on him. And so far, it looks like a legitimate bat with some upside. You know, he's one of those kind of athletes and body types that it's maybe questionable. Maybe it's a shortstop. Maybe it's a third baseman. But the arm is there. The actions are there. I don't know. I think this guy could be trending toward the top 100 if he's still producing like this and has this kind of underlying data come June 1st.
100% agree. 100% agree.
He's excited.
And that would also, let's just be clear. You know, we've talked about this on the draft podcast recently. If you look at the White Sox and you say, okay, White Sox hitting draft prospects, right? Hitters that they draft, not trade for, not sign internationally. Been a pretty bleak list. Pretty bleak.
It's really bad. Like, I went back and looked and was kind of shocked because even the slam dunks, like an Andrew Vaughn has not been a slam dunk. You know,
it's not Nationals bad. Let's be clear. Nationals bad is as bad as it gets in the last 15 years. We wrote about that. I need to update it. But like,
yeah,
there was a stretch there where you said post Anthony Rendon, right? And if you're saying post Anthony Rendon, that's been a while now because Anthony's been, it's been a few years since Anthony Rendon's been at the peak of his powers. But after him, there was a stretch there where you're like, who's the best position player now? And unfortunately for the Nationals right now, it's gotten a little better, but the guys that they have that are producing, if you say draftees, C.J. Abrams doesn't count. James Wood doesn't count. Jacob Young doesn't count. Dylan Cruz counts, but so far that's not counting in the way that you want it to count. Mm. So Keibert Ruiz doesn't count. So, but the White Sox, it's not been great. You know, that's so tough. Caleb Bonnemer could be one of the guys kind of changing that trend. It'll be interesting to see. But again, we're going to keep it, try to keep it to a tight 45 tonight. Jeff's had a long day. I've had a long day. You know, we've both had a lot. And I've got to edit this so we can get this up. We always try to get this up. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, our goal is up Wednesday morning, both on YouTube and on the podcast feeds. We hope you are enjoying these prospect podcasts. Again, if you have any thoughts, reach out to us on social, you know, YouTube comments. I read all those, try to respond to a lot of those. Had a fun one today where I had comments today, one where someone was telling me that Mickey Mantle ran a 3-flat from home to first and from the left and 3-2 from the right. And I mean, if you'd have said any other player from that era, I would have to rely on research. But I happen to know a scout who's no longer with us, but who I got to sit with at multiple games. And one time I said to him, who's the fastest guy you ever saw? You know, you ever timed? Thought about it for a second. He went, Mickey Mantle, when I was, you know, with the Yankees back then in his prime. And I said, what was he? He said, I got 3-4. So not 3-flat. And then the guy told me I should go Google it. And I'm like, which was fun because I'm like, I don't have to Google it. I talked to someone who actually did that at the time, not someone who said this is what they saw 100 years later or whatever, you know. But so we had that. But we also had someone who told us on YouTube today that no high school pitcher could throw 100 with a Stalker Pro 2, which I was able to say on that one too. Yes, they do. And I can say that because you know what we've seen from a high school pitcher on the Baseball America Stalker Pro 2? 100 miles an hour or more. So, you know, that was fun too. But if you have comments, we love to hear them. Even the ones that I might disagree with, I'll try to politely disagree with them and all. So for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time, it's subject to change. Max one offer per account.